Hawkey, welcome back.
Yes, welcome.
To yet another sparkling edition of
Indeed.
The Two Mics on the Record.
Indeed.
Bursting away through 5 million listens.
Yes.
Heading upwards towards 6 million listens. Very,
Indeed.
Very exciting times
Indeed.
We're in right now here with Audio Boom.
Yep.
Now, we haven't got a Hawkey Vision this week.
No.
We have, however, got to chat about a number of things.
Oh, absolutely.
I noticed that you've brought some journals with you.
Oh, I brought journals with me.
So there are lots of your stories that you want to get off your chest.
Well, there's one story I've got to share with all our millions of listeners now. And it is, in fact, that in this very week, in 1547...
What?
On this very week.
What, you're going back to the 16th century?
Historically, I'm a mind of information, mate.
Really?
These are very interesting stories.
Right.
But Ivan the Terrible was crowned Tsar of Russia in this week in 1547.
Oh, yeah.
And my God, was he terrible.
He really was terrible.
Oh, he was
I
awful.
Can tell you how terrible he was, actually,
yeah,
because
yeah.
I had the misfortune once when I was living in New York of going to have to see a ballet version of Ivan the Terrible, right?
You're joking.
And it was when my sister was married to Alan Hall and I was married to my ex-wife.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
And, you know, it was all very pompous, like, oh, super, look, the Bolshoi Ballet have come to town.
That's right.
And all the kind of, you know, upwardly mobile
and it was
types.
The Bolshoi, was it?
It was the Bolshoi,
the Bolshoi,
yeah.
Bolshoi,
yeah, no, because everybody goes mad. They go, oh,
yeah, that's
the Bolshoi.
Right.
This was before,
yeah,
I think it was before the wall came down.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely,
so
yeah.
It was, you know, they've come out from behind the curtain, so artistic,
that's right, yeah.
Brilliant, you know.
Yeah.
And we went there. It was the worst fucking show I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And the thing that I couldn't believe was that the all you could hear was this.
What
you
was
know,
that?
The fucking feet on the ballot on the stage.
Oh, I see.
The music wasn't loud enough.
So it sounded a bit like, what's that Irish
like,
one?
Yeah, it's like the Lord of the Dance.
Lord of the Dance.
I mean, I kept saying, why is the music louder so I can't hear the bloody sound? So Alan and I buggered off at half time.
Right, to the bar.
And at that point, actually nicknamed it Ivan the Terrible, a word that we can't use on a family show like this.
And did you notice that in these ballets, because I've been to one once at the Royal Opera House.
Yeah.
In fact, I've been to the Bolshoi Ballet in Moscow.
Have you?
Pete Hitchens
right.
took me there, yeah.
Okay.
But not to see a production. No, just to see the building.
Just to walk around.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. But the men wear extraordinary outfits which make their bollocks protrude all over the place, don't they?
Well, they're wearing a sort of codpiece.
Yeah, that's right,
effectively.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Sort and of, funnily enough,
what do you call it?
It's a sort
what
of
you used
a
to call it when.
Triangular shaped thing.
In football, it used to be called the.
It was like a cricket box.
Jockstrap.
Yeah,
jockstrap.
Or like a cricket
right,
box or something like that.
Yeah,
it's rather odd looking, I have to say.
Yeah, very odd looking, yeah.
And some of the women are very beautiful, but, you know, but I just, I mean, I couldn't watch it. It was just so boring.
Yeah, sure.
But yes, Ivan the Terrible. Was terrible.
Well, he was a terrible
killed
bloke.
An awful lot of people.
Oh, definitely killed an awful lot of people. Now it's the way he used to kill them, though, because you know, like in parts of Russia, it gets very, very cold.
Yes,
it can get to sort of minus 25, minus 30.
Mm.
So what he'd do with his enemies in, he'd put them in a pit. Okay.
Yeah.
And they'd wonder what was going on, and they were stark naked, and it's about minus 20.
Naked.
Yes. And he would then pour. Warmed water, which he'd been heating, into the pit up to the necks of the prisoners, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Which froze within seconds.
Yeah. Blimey.
So they died frozen inside.
Like hypothermia.
Yes, that's right, inside an ice block.
Is that actually, though, possibly quite humane? Because you know how they say one of the ways to kill a lobster, which is less, shall we say,
painful,
cruel,
yes.
is you put them in the freezer before you cook them.
Yeah.
And so that when they're actually, they then become sort of comatose almost, frozen in a freezer.
Yeah.
So when you plunge them into the hot water, they don't really feel it.
Well, I don't think it's meant to be merciful because.
No.
Apart from the fact that you freeze to death, which isn't very pleasant,
no.
The ice, of course, when it freezes, crushes your body.
Oh, right.
Because ice expands when it freezes.
Yes.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, that would be quite sore, I suppose.
So you can't breathe or anything like that.
Yeah.
So it's not very pleasant. But he had an even worse punishment for those he really didn't like,
right.
Okay?
Yeah.
What he used to do was, he used to dangle their dick and their bollocks, right, into...
Genitalia.
The genitalia, that's right, yeah, the genitalia,
Why
sorry.
Is it that you extract such pleasure from talking about torture? Well, people have asked me this in the past.
No,
why
no.
is Porky love torture?
I don't,
so
no,
you
no.
do.
But
you
what
love
he,
torture.
What he'd do is he would dangle their, you know, their genitalia
Dangly
bits.
Dangly bits.
Yeah, sorry if I used a...
Yeah, my apologies.
My apologies for the previous word I used. And he would dangle it in a bucket, right, and that would freeze.
Well, how would that work then? Were you kind of suspended over the bucket?
Yes, you were. Yeah, yeah. You were
right.
on a rack, and you were lowered down.
All right. Okay.
And then your genitalia was immersed in a bucket,
right.
which then froze. Okay.
Right.
Now that had the same effect, and you were left there for a day or two. outside in the cold, freezing cold, minus 20 or something like that, and you noticed your genitalia turning black.
Black?
Yes.
I was thinking you'd say blue.
No. Oh, well, it's gone through blue to black because, of course...
It was like gangrene.
That's right, you're getting gangrene around the genitalia, okay?
Bloody hell.
And of course, you would, at some stage in the next 2 or 3 days, witness your genitalia falling off.
Right.
Because it would just snap off.
I suppose by that time, you're probably quite happy for it to fall off because it's probably quite painful.
Yes, but then, of course, you know, even if you recovered then, you're going to be a man without any genitalia.
Well, I'm not supposed to be too worried about that, to be honest. If you can actually escape from Ivan the Terrible.
Well,
isn't that the same thing they used to do to bulls?
I don't know.
To make it impossible for them to to be rampant. Because they used to attach, I mean, the old bull clips, they call them bull clips, because they attach, you know, the big the bull clip to the bollocks.
That's right,
so they fall off.
Not only that, but it wouldn't let any sperm pass from from the testicles through
into...
Well,
you don't have to get that technical.
No, I mean, you know what I mean,
As far as I know, that's the deal.
But that's not the end of the torture. What would happen is, after 2 or 3 days of this, Ivan would then send his chief torturer in, a man with no teeth, no black teeth, and say, how are you feeling now? How are you feeling now, you miserable bastard? You're enemy of the state.
Right.
And the guy was, like, shivering a bit because it's minus 20. You know.
And so who were these people he was torturing? Were they sort of offending members of his
lots of
operation?
Them.
Were they?
No, lots of them. You know,
people in other countries?
Well, Russia was very tribal in those days. You know, they had the Cossacks and all the other guys who were all fighting each other all the time. That's eventually resulted in the Russian Civil War, didn't it? 1918.
The Russian Revolution,
The revolution came before the Civil War.
Well, we've had an argument about this before.
Yeah, but anyway, so he would, the chief torturer would say, this miserable bastard, you know. Now, are you ready to talk? Would you like me to take the ice off your genitalia? And the minute the guy said yes, they then lit a fire under his genitalia.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so...
Is this after it turned black or what?
Well, the ice melted and then his genitalia burnt.
That's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah, it was...
I mean, when people talk about, you know, cruelty...
That's right,
things that people have to live through now.
Yeah,
I mean, there's nothing as cruel as that.
No, there's
not. You can never, ever have anything as cruel as that.
No, you can't,
that's
can you?
It's absolutely horrendous.
Absolutely horrendous, but, I mean, that's the sort of thing it is, isn't it? And
so he was born on this this time.
No,
15...
no. He ascended to power. He was crowned as Tsar.
Right.
For the whole of the it was a Russian Federation. That was just Russia.
Yeah.
Because of course all the other countries were independent.
I remember. I mean, they like they sort of use ice a lot. The Russians. I remember when I was young, and I think I've mentioned this to you before. Yeah, my dad used to take me to these movies.
Yes.
At the Everyman Cinema in Hampstead.
Right.
Which was a bit of an arty kind of cinema.
Yes.
And so when all these other kids were watching and James Bond and stuff and Bullet.
Yeah, yeah.
I was being taken to see the kind of the trilogy of Alexander Nevsky.
Really?
Which was great, actually, but it was all these old black and white movies made in Russia. And I also vividly remember there was a sort of battle scene. I can't remember who Alexander Nevsky was, but I think he was a sort of local Robin Hood type figure.
Right.
But I remember this scene where there was a load of men on horseback and they were being chased by some other men on horseback. They were very clever because they ran across on horseback this kind of frozen lake.
Yes.
But because there were fewer of them, they led the larger number onto the same lake, and they all drowned.
Oh,
dear. There's so many of them, they all fell into the lake.
Yeah, not good news, eh?
No.
Not good news at all.
That's what I remember.
Now then, listen, one of my technological journals, I've come across a ridiculous report which says the rise of robots could wipe out 9 million jobs.
Really?
Now, what do you think about that?
Well, I'm all in favour of not working.
Well,
you know as well as I do, you're always accusing me of being a dilettante.
That's right, I am,
if I could sit around and have the same amount of money that I've got and I didn't need to work, I'd be quite happy with that.
Yeah, okay, well, it's not going to be like that. If you don't work, you don't get paid.
Oh, well, that's not
good.
But
it says here, almost 9 million British jobs are at the risk because of the rise of robots, and that's supposed to be an official report, okay? Mm. Now, of course, this is a complete load of utter bollocks, as usual, because what these idiots who compile these reports never do is, okay, so you make robots, and robots do some of the jobs. For instance, you will very soon be able to build houses with robots quite easily.
Really?
It's already come in. I think I've told you this before. Bricklayers now can be supplanted by robots that lay bricks at 10 times the speed of a bricklayer.
They can, but they can't do everything that a bricklayer can do.
They can.
For example, they can't stop midway through and make a cup of tea for all their mates.
Well, I mean, that's why a robot's so much more efficient.
They might
that's
not be able
saying.
To move from making the bricks, for example, down to mixable cement. You might have to have a different robot to mix the cement.
No, no, it all comes as one. It's like, you know, when people, when I worked in the Birmingham Evening Mail, it was during the period when they introduced robots for the first time into British Leyland.
Oh, yeah.
They had to, because British Leyland was so far behind in technology.
But also, they were always on strike.
They're always on strike. Yeah. Red Robbo was the guy in charge, Derek Robinson.
Wasn't there a period
honestly, troublesome individual.
Was there not a period of time for about a year where they actually didn't produce one car?
Probably, but I mean, there were so many car companies in the Midlands, one of them was always on strike.
Yeah.
And what they used to do to completely shut down the industry was they would then go and get the brothers at the transporter company that used to take the cars
around
and tell their drivers to go on strike.
Right.
There was an awful lot of intimidation about, and if you didn't go on strike and you're told to go on strike, you're out of it.
Well, do you remember the flying pickets and all that?
Yeah, I remember that. I got involved in all that because I was, you know, as I said, Birmingham Mail. I then worked for the Birmingham Mail in London, very industrial paper, and I used to go down to places like the Isle of Sheppey during the steel strike, and the coal miners would turn up as flying pickets and all this kind of stuff.
Did you never get intimidated by these characters?
Oh, all the time. Yeah. All the time. They, you know, the bastard press and all that kind of stuff, you know. And they throw you over hedges and all sorts of things, you know. Yeah, yeah. Arthur Scargill would often turn up and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, the point is, they appointed a guy called Michael Edwards. He was a South African. And they said, you've got to change this. It just can't go on like this. It'll all close down.
Yeah.
So he introduced robots, right?
Yeah.
And people said robots can't build cars. Well, they could.
Well, they can build cars. But see, that's easy, though, because you've got basically a conveyor belt. You've got a sort of a transportation device that you're putting together.
Yeah.
And you've seen how they all work. You know, they sort of bend up and down.
Yeah, one guy puts the root.
It's not a robot like we would think a robot would be, like in, for example, the Terminator, right?
Yeah.
Where you see the robot walking and appearing to be like a human.
Yes.
That's the day that I'm looking forward to, because then they will be able to do all the work that we don't want to do.
Yeah, that's true. But anyway, they introduced the robots. It was no good. British Leyland went bust anyway.
Right.
They dissolved it again into smaller companies like Austin and Morris and all MG. That kind of stuff. They produced some of the worst cars in the world anyway.
Yeah.
Produced one called the Allegro.
I remember the Austin Allegro,
It had a square driving wheel and all this
that
kind of
awful.
Stuff.
That was awful. Remember also, because I remember there was a time when we were thinking about getting a new car.
Yeah.
Because it was a big thing in those days.
Yes, that's right.
The family got a car.
Yeah. Yeah.
We had an old Austin Cambridge which finally came to the end of its life.
Yeah.
And we had a name for it. I mean, you just call it Whitey.
Yes.
Because it was a white car.
Yeah,
you know, which is probably a racist term now. Anyway, we decided, so we looked, and I wanted them to get an Austin 3 litre. Do you remember those?
Right. Yes,
like
I do.
Really
yes,
big,
I do. Yeah,
heavy looking car.
It was. It was like a bigger version of the 1300. Yeah.
Horrible
1300.
Car, though, actually, in retrospect. Yeah. We ended up instead getting an Audi 100.
Right,
which was in the days before Audi was trendy.
Yeah, that's right.
And it was a lovely car.
Nobody had a foreign car in those days.
Not really, no.
Some guy turned up to take my sister out years ago in a Peugeot.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, what's this? What's a Pougat? You know, what's this Pougat? You know. And he said, it's French. I said, take that filthy car out
I'm
of
sure
my street.
I'm sure she was very grateful for that.
Yeah, yeah. Take that filthy car out of my street. I was very patriotic in those days, you know.
And
I
no, let you one, were just objectionable.
I let,
like
one, I let one of his tyres down, actually.
Really?
When he parked there.
And said,
Don't ever bring your Pugo.
I like Peugeots, actually. Quite good cars.
Oh, in those days, they were awful, most cars. Don't ever bring your Pugo up my street again, mate. You know,
don't
this French filth.
I remember highlight of our, the first sort of long trip we took in the Audi.
Yeah.
We had to go and visit some friends in Bristol or
something. Yeah.
And my sister and I were in the back. And there's a bit of the road, a bit of the M4, just as you're coming into Bristol.
Right.
Where you kind of come down a hill.
Right.
And we got up to 100 miles an hour.
Wow.
With my mother driving. It was the most exciting thing that ever happened.
Yeah. With your mother driving, I actually think it was the most dangerous thing that ever happened as
well. It would have been if it was later on. So it was quite compass-mentous in those days.
But anyway, so what I'm saying is, don't they realise that when you introduce robots into the workplace, somebody's got to build those robots.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to build the robot. Somebody's got to design the robot.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to introduce the technology.
Although, once the robots are up and running properly, they can just continue to manufacture themselves, can't they?
Not really, because you will improve the technology all the time to make them brighter and brighter and brighter, but they're not to the point where they can manufacture themselves.
Yeah, but did you not see a while back,
it
was in China, I think, there was a video of the first artificial intelligence newsreader.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
And it was very weird looking. It didn't
I remember
sound
that.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a person, effectively, talking into a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that, to me, is the end of newsreading, isn't it?
No, I totally agree.
Because why would you need any newsreaders if you can actually just get a robot to do it?
No, I totally agree.
They don't need any time off.
They don't need time off.
They don't argue with you about what news to do.
No, you just program them and they do it. But no, what I was going to say was, with old Red Robbo, he eventually drove the workers into rebellion.
Yeah.
So they had this mass meeting at Longbridge one morning. Longbridge was the biggest car factory in the world.
Is it still there?
No, it's gone. It's gone. It's
Cowley's still there, isn't it?
Cowley's near Oxford.
Yeah.
And I think Cowley is still there.
Because I think Cowley was one of the Jaguar Land Rover places.
Yeah, it was, yeah. But Longbridge was broken up into a series of smaller sort of, you know, industrial development places and all that kind of stuff. Mm. But so he turns up one day, gets up on the stage, right, brothers, and they would strike on things like somebody moved the table in the canteen from the place it was yesterday to where
no
it is today.
No more Mars bars or something.
No more Mars bars or something like that.
All out.
Yeah, all out, yeah. Right, brothers. So anyway, these guys had suddenly realised that they'd already missed 14 weeks' work this year.
Right.
And the union had run out of funds to pay them all the strike money because that's the way it worked.
Right.
So he said, right, brothers, we have decided the latest productivity demand of 27% on top of normal wages have been rejected by the company. Therefore, I propose a motion that we down tools, one out, all out. And all the crowd, who Robert expected to start cheering, all said, fuck off, Robbo, you fat bastard.
Right.
They'd had enough, and they'd come with fruit, and they started throwing fruit
really?
At him. Yeah, on the spot.
So why did they not fancy the striking anymore?
Because then? They'd run out of money.
Right.
They'd all run out of money.
Right.
And Michael Edwards had arrived and said, I'm going to close the factory down because none of you ever bother working, you know. So they suddenly thought, oh, we're in the real world now.
Yeah.
Somebody's telling
Because they
us.
Never thought that would happen, did they?
Never thought
never
it would
thought
happen.
Someone would actually pull the plug.
Because it was all backed by government money. But Mrs. Thatcher had arrived on the scene.
Yes.
Or I think she'd just been voted in, actually. I think that was 79,
79
wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And had made it absolutely clear that, you know, companies like this would just have to be closed down.
Well, it was like the printers in the newspaper
business,
right? Of
course it was,
right? They all said, no, they're never going to get rid of us, mate.
Yeah.
How can they ever print the paper without us?
Yeah.
And Rupert Murdoch just said, well, I'll tell you what we could do. We're going to hire all the electricians.
That's right.
Behind your back.
Eric
they'll
Hammond.
All come and do the work that you think you can do only.
Yeah.
And we'll get along fine, thanks very much. And they all found themselves out of a job.
They found themselves out of a job. Eric Hammond was the leader of the Electricians Union.
Yeah.
Mr Murdoch could promise him another 2,000 or 3,000
There was a
jobs.
Woman, wasn't there, in charge
Brenda
of
Dean.
Brenda Dean, that's right.
Yeah, you know, Mr Murdoch was proposing to offer hundreds of men, if not thousands, a new, better-paid job.
Yeah.
Because they took away the antiquarian divide that newspapers were printed on in Fleet Street, started producing them with computers.
Right.
The cost per newspaper, of course, shot down. They could pay better wages.
Yeah.
But no, in the car industry, they it just turned overnight, and all of a sudden, Red Rubber was run out of town.
Yeah.
And years later, when I was working on the Express in Manchester, and we used to cover sort of North Wales, I had to go and find him. And he had this massive country cottage in North Wales.
Probably still being paid for by the union.
Yeah, like all these barons do. Well, Arthur Scargill, for years, for about 30 years, lived in a flat in the Barbican in London, one of the most, you know, select locations of residency in London, and lived there as a union leader, being paid for by the damn National Union of Miners, which he wrecked. He single-handedly
Unbelievable.
Wrecked.
Yeah, incredible. And when you think about it now, it seems so antiquated because now I think almost any car in the world that is produced is produced by machines.
Absolutely.
No way would they want loads and loads of people sitting there making mistakes.
Absolutely.
And by the way, have you heard of this woman called Marie Kondo?
Marie Kondo?
Yeah.
No, what's a condo is a flat.
Well, it's Kondo with a K as opposed to Kondo with a C, which is, of course, short for condominium. No, she's from Japan, right?
Yeah.
She's a woman from Japan, and she's got a television show on Netflix.
Oh, yes.
And what she does, basically, is she encourages people to tidy their houses. Okay?
Right.
And apparently, the Marie Kondo effect is now having such an effect in this country that more and more charity shops are getting more and more stuff.
Right.
Because her mantra is this, right?
Yeah.
If it does not give you joy, you must throw it out.
Right.
And it's basically what she does. She goes into people's houses.
Yeah, yeah.
A bit like the two women, like Aggie and...
Yeah, I know. Yeah, yeah.
But instead of just cleaning the house, she reorganises it all, right? So she'll come into your wardrobe and she'll say... Well, I mean, look at the state of this. You have to put your shoes all in a line like this, or you have to get a special rack for your shoes.
Yeah.
All your ties have to be rolled and put into a drawer like that.
Sure.
Your underwear has to be folded and put over there.
Yeah.
All your shirts have to, you know, it's like that. So, but apparently, the show has gone viral on Netflix, right?
Right.
Millions and millions of people are now watching it. Tidying Up, it's called, with Marie Kondo.
Right.
Right. And she is organising everybody's lives.
Yeah.
And I'm sick of it.
Good.
Because I don't want to be organised by somebody else.
Well, do you know what? Do you know what? That's very interesting. Because I have decided to declutter my stockbroker belt Surrey residence.
Yeah,
you're
very much in tune with Marie Kondo, she's all about decluttering.
Right. So I opened a wardrobe the other day, which is not my main wardrobe. It's in the back bedroom,
How many wardrobes have you got?
About three.
Why have you got three wardrobes?
Well, they're full of coats and things. And this
how many coats have you got?
I've got three overcoats, and I've got about... 12 suits, I suppose.
Yeah, you've got only three wardrobes for that. It's one wardrobe.
No. But they've got shelves where I've got jumpers and all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And general clutter, really. And I decide I've got to go. So into the third wardrobe I go. Mm. And I found in the bottom of the wardrobe things like unopened boxes of cutlery.
Cutlery?
No, not cutlery. What's the stuff? Cups and plates and all that kind of
crockery.
Stuff. Crockery.
Why have you got that?
I don't know. I've no idea.
Well, if this is stuff you've been buying on the old shopping channel again.
I don't know.
Laterated.
No, I don't think
I know. I'll get a 24-piece dinner set and get it delivered.
I did. Now, what I've done is, for the first time ever, I put a load of this stuff in the car and I drove to the tip and started throwing it all away. And it's all really good stuff.
Well, hang on. If it's brand new, you should give it to the guys that run the tip. And they'll sell it, because they usually have a little shop there, don't they?
Oh, I don't know.
No, if it's brand new stuff, they'll make money, because they quite like that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, and other sorts of things, like...
Well, hang on. You told me in the past that you've got about five kettles, about six irons.
I have all of those,
Are you going to get rid of all them?
I'm getting rid of all of them, because some of them now like to add a date and all that kind of stuff. You know, I've had them for so long.
Well, they still boil water.
Well, they probably would, but you can only use one kettle at a time. That's the problem, and I don't need a new kettle.
Unless you're doing a bit of torturing, of course, in which case you get some vibe and the terrible
boiled water. Somebody's genitalia. No, you're absolutely right, but I believe in all that. You know, the one problem you've got is I've got racks and racks and racks of shirts, okay?
Have you also got the problem, which I say, I'll be quite candid to say I suffer from this.
Yeah.
I've got clothes. I've got an overcoat. You've seen it. You've taken the piss out of it.
Yeah.
The kind of Columbo coat, which I must have bought in New York around about 1984, 85. Now, if you consider how old that is.
Yes.
But I can't bring myself to throw it away.
Well, I have this problem.
I hardly ever wear it, right?
I have this problem. I've got shirts which I haven't worn for, I would say, a year, and I won't throw them away. And do you know why? Because they're good shirts.
Well, that's it.
But I just don't like them anymore, I just don't wear them.
I'll tell you what I find is I'm just incapable of throwing a lot of that stuff out. I mean, I've been through my wardrobe a couple of times to make way for new clothes.
Yeah.
Because let's face it, there will be clothes in there that I can't fit into anymore.
Yeah, that's right,
You know, since I put a bit of weight
on. That's right, yeah.
But part of you thinks, but I'll keep that because I'll lose the weight and I'll put it back on again.
Yeah, you do think that as well. Now, the other thing is shoes, right?
Yeah.
Now, I counted up 24 pairs of shoes.
Okay. And that's about average, I would say, for someone like you.
Well, for a bloke. Most blokes have two pairs of shoes.
No, I've got
three.
Well, yeah, but again, I've got pairs of shoes that I probably should think about chucking because I very rarely wear. I've got a pair of black dress shoes, right?
Yes.
Which I used to wear when I wore a suit. But now,
are they patent?
No, I bought those are new. The patent shoes I wore on the Christmas show.
Yes,
those I bought brand new.
Right,
because I wanted to wear them with a dinner suit.
Right, okay,
So they're dinner suit shoes. No, this is a pair of shoes that I would have worn, say, for example, in the old days when I was on stage.
Yeah.
In a suit, or if I went to work every day in a suit. But now I tend to wear these Chelsea boots all the time.
Right, okay.
So I never wear them.
Right, okay.
But I can't bring myself to throw them away.
Yeah, well, I have that same sort of problem, and you just got to be ruthless
with
yourself.
You must have some very interesting stuff, though.
Oh, got some.
I mean, if you've got crockery, what else have you got?
Well, I've got a couple of boxes that I brought back from America first time, and I know what's in there because I went on a campaign trail with Walter Mondale, okay?
Oh, yeah.
And I know that in there are badges saying, vote Walter Mondale.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, there's a huge market in political memorabilia in America. You go to Washington.
Well, do you remember when we went to Strawberry Fields?
Yes.
And we walked down through Central Park.
That's right.
And there was a guy selling
all
the old badges.
He was,
And you said, I've got that one.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, if you go to Georgetown, just across the river, just over
in
the
DC,
beach in DC. There's all those little shops there all sell the political memorabilia.
Yeah.
And I'm dying to open my my box of stuff I brought from Americans. There'll be all sorts of
there might be other things in there, like pads, like, because you're like me I think you keep things like hotel pens.
I do
collect them.
I've got hundreds of packets of
matches
because they don't give matches out anymore in hotels, but every hotel I ever went into there was always a bowl of matches, a bowl of packets of matches on the counter, and I didn't always smoke in those days, but I used to take one everywhere I went. I got some
it's like a souvenir, wasn't it?
It's just like a
souvenir. My mother, of course, on the other hand, used to steal ashtrays. You
stole an ashtray from me once in a restaurant in New York. I think it was in Palm 2.
Oh, really?
And I said, "Oh, this ashtray's great." And you said, "Yeah." I said, and you said, "We'll take one." I said, "I'm not taking one." And you just picked it up and slipped it in your side pocket and gave it me when we got home.
It's a shocking thing. Yeah. But I probably gave it to her, didn't I?
No, he gave it to me.
Did I?
Yeah, he definitely gave it to me.
She was found out very badly once. She was once having lunch in the Royal Crescent Hotel in Bath. Have you ever been there? Which is that beautiful big sort of crescent in front of the big lawn.
Oh, yeah, I know it. Yeah,
and right in the middle is a very beautiful old-fashioned sort of English boutique hotel.
Right.
But it's got that very nice black and white sort of diamond...
Yes.
What might you call it? The tile flooring.
Right.
Very hard tile flooring.
Yes.
Right? And she was leaving, having had lunch there with her companion of the time.
Right.
And this ashtray fell from outside, out of her hand.
Oh, I see.
And smashed into 1,000 pieces on the floor.
Right.
And the maitre d' came out and said, "Oh, madame, I'm terribly sorry." And he started sweeping up, realised it was a fucking stolen ashtray.
Right, bloody hell.
She never went back.
Well, they're embarrassing. Mm. Now, listen, I've come across an opportunity for your dog, Ziggy.
Yes.
Right?
He doesn't like opportunities. He's the laziest dog alive.
Is he?
He doesn't like doing things.
Well, this is a pretty great opportunity.
All right.
Victims of crime are being offered the comforting services of an emotional support dog.
Oh, yeah, support dog, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Kent police are sending Labradors.
Right.
And they are Labrador Retriever crosses. Is that a
Yeah, that could be. Well, he's actually a purebred Labrador, but, you know.
Okay. To help victims during crime interviews as part of a study led by Canterbury Christ Church University support.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Right.
And what happens is what it does is victims who are traumatized or witnesses to crime are able to relate their memory of the crime or what they've seen when the crime was carried out much more easily if they're stroking and patting a dog.
Yes.
It relaxes them, it makes them feel safe and secure.
I'm sure that's true. But we've seen these ridiculous stories from America, haven't we, where people have got on planes and things with something other than a what do they call it? What sort of dog do they call it?
A support dog.
A support dog, somebody turned up with a support peacock.
Yes.
Somebody turned up with a support rat.
Yes, that's right.
A support snake.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, where does it end?
No,
you know what I mean?
You're absolutely right. They say the dogs help particularly young people, okay, who are sometimes been victim of sort of sexual assault and that terrible thing, you know, and they can recall events much more accurately and have been shown to cut police interviews in half, sometimes saving 30 hours in an investigation.
Really?
Because they have to coax information out of younger people.
Yeah.
And if there's a little dog there and they're patting the dog and playing with the dog, they tend to...
very well.
Yeah.
But how does this work for my dog? Well, do I have to loan him to the police?
Yeah, well, absolutely. And they pay you for it.
They
pay you quite large sums of money.
What sort of money are we talking about?
Well, you know, could be like 250 quid a day.
Really?
And all that would have to happen is that you would just send one of your sons with the dog to a local cop shop, right?
I'm not sending my kids to the police station.
Yeah,
of course you're joking.
No, of course you could.
What, have you gone mad?
No, I haven't gone mad at all.
Why would I send my children to a police station to mix with violent criminals?
Well, they wouldn't be violent criminals.
They'd be violent criminals there.
No, they
would. It's a police station.
They would be protected by the police.
Oh,
okay?
Right, yeah, of course.
No doubt about
that. The police are so good at protecting people.
Yeah.
The police in this country, right, I'm sorry to say, are not doing a terribly good job.
Yeah.
I mean, look at what happened in Sussex, right? The Sussex police.
Yes.
Who couldn't find their own arse with a banjo, I have to say.
No.
Or whatever the phrase is.
Yes.
Don't know whether there was ever a drone at Gatwick Airport.
Couldn't hit a cow's arse with a banjo.
Couldn't even find the cow's arse.
That's right.
Wouldn't even know if there was a cow.
No,
in fact, they might say, in fact, it might have been our cow.
Yeah, that's right.
They thought it might have been their own drone.
We couldn't spot the cow, and you say, well, the cow's quite big things. Yeah. You know, they're brown and white, they run around, and they moo a lot.
That's right.
Well, I couldn't find one.
But they certainly don't fly.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. If I sent them Ziggy, they'd probably fucking lose him.
Well,
I'd go back and they'd go, what?
Yeah.
You know, where's the dog? What dog?
No. It's absolutely true. You might have a problem with Ziggy, but I thought it was a cheap way of you making money.
Yeah, but I'm not like you, see. I'm not constantly looking for money-making opportunities.
Yes.
I mean, you never stop looking for ways to make money, do you?
Well, I know. I think it's a very good thing that you should always be alert to the opportunity.
I'll tell you what I'm going to talk to you about next time, because we haven't got time now. But have you seen that story about how you can go to Sicily and buy a house for 90 pence?
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah, that's
now,
fantastic.
I wonder why you haven't got yourself over there and decided to do it already.
Well, don't worry. I've thought about it because I thought a little, you know, £67 flight to Sicily. Yeah. Have a look at a few of these properties.
Now, because the only thing you have to do, apparently, is sign up and promise to spend about 13 grand over the course of the next 4 years.
That's right.
To renovate the house.
That's right.
Now, a man of your means, that's bugger all.
And then you could then you provide it as part of the stock of social housing locally.
No, or you could just you have it as a holiday home.
You could have it as a holiday home, but you can only use one holiday home. I would be thinking about buying, you know, like six or seven.
Would you not be worried, though, because of where it is? You know
if you only paid that much for them, no, not really.
No, but hang on. No, I don't mean it in that sense. I mean in the sense of, you know, who runs Sicily.
Oh, you mean if the local...
The Black Hand.
Yeah, well, not just the Black Hand, but if the local protection unit arrives.
Well, I'm talking about the Black Hand, you know, the Cosa Nostra.
Yeah, that's right.
When somebody comes and goes, Mr. Perry...
Yes.
It's very nice. Welcome to Zambuca, which is the name of the village, right?
Yes, that's right. Zambuca, that's
not only,
a drink, isn't it?
Not only will we be asking you for 13,000,
yes.
But we will also be asking for you to empty your bank account.
Yes, that's right,
Otherwise, we will shoot you in the head.
Oh, and set fire to your properties, of course, you know, because that's what we do over here.
That would be my worry.
We would. I always used to talk to Peter Stringfellow when he was alive, God rest his soul.
Well, you can't talk to him when he's dead,
you can't talk when he's dead.
No.
And I used to say, Peter, so you're a northern boy, you had your club in Manchester, you moved to London. I said, how did you avoid having to pay vast amounts of money to the London gangsters and mobs who, you know, extort money from
otherwise
businesses like yours?
Burn your place down. Yeah.
And he never told me.
Right.
He just sort of winked and said, we got around it.
Yeah,
you know? Now, I don't know whether he means that he brought some tough men from the north to counter them or something like that. You know, it was a gang
or he maybe gave him a bit of tribute money.
A bit of tribute money or something like that. But I think a lot of it also involves a very close relationship with the local police as well.
Right.
And I think it goes round in a circle.
Mm.
I think Peter Stringfellow had a relationship with the police had a relationship with the gangsters, the gangsters have a relationship
with
Peter.
Well, those were in the days, though, when they had rules, you know, whereas now you get the sense where there are no rules anymore when you've got these Russian gangs knocking about,
you've
got these Albanian drug gangs.
Absolutely.
They don't give a shit about anybody.
Absolutely.
And they don't adhere to any kind of red lines, you know, where probably in the old days, the old gangsters would go, yeah, we'll leave him alone. He's all right.
Yeah.
He's all right.
That's right.
You let
yeah.
my son in when he wants to bring his bird and all that.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't charge him nothing.
Well,
but they wouldn't actually burn the place down.
You must have seen all the pictures of the Cray twins when they had their nightclub in Leicester Square. And, you know, Lord Boothby was there because he became a lover of one of the Crays, didn't he?
That's right.
Can't remember which one was. Who was the gay one? Was it...
I don't like to talk about it.
Is it Ronnie?
I think it was Ronnie.
It was Ronnie, And
it's not a very good idea to talk about that.
No, it's not a very good idea at all.
You might find somebody put some more nails in your tyres.
I totally agree with that. But no, the point of, well, you know who was involved in that? Barbara Windsor.
Yeah.
Who is still alive now.
Yeah.
Because her husband, who was a gangster, ran a nightclub.
Yes.
But it was a front, really, for criminal activities.
Yeah. Right.
And his name was Ronnie Knight.
Yes,
right?
I remember that.
And
well, did he not? Was he not friends with that bloke Kenny Noy and all that crowd?
Oh, I'm sure he was.
The
one,
you know, the guy was the M25 killer.
He's just got out, Kenny Noy.
Yeah,
or he's just getting out.
Better not talk about him either.
Don't talk about that either. No, it's not good for business. But no,
it's only business.
Yeah, quite seriously, what happened was Ronnie Knight's brother suddenly got killed because that's what happens to gangsters.
That does happen. Yeah.
So anyway, Ronnie Knight personally tracked down the man who he thought was the killer.
Right.
And is alleged to have stabbed him to death in another nightclub,
okay? Right.
But he went on trial at the Old Bailey and was cleared.
Nobody saw anything.
Sorry?
Nobody saw anything,
right? So Barbara Windsor was at the BBC doing a show on the afternoon that Ronnie Knight got charged.
Was this before EastEnders then?
It was before the days of EastEnders. Yeah. And I went over to the BBC and I said, oh, and she's a tiny little woman. I mean, she's about 4'11", you know what I mean?
Right.
And she was in floods of tears. And the strangest thing was, he said, I always told Wally I didn't like the nightclub business. So I said, but he doesn't run a nightclub, does he? She said, what do you mean? And I said, well, he's a gangster, isn't he? You know, isn't the nightclub just like a front for his criminal activities?
Oh, yeah, like she's going to say yes to that.
And she looked at me as though I was talking, you know, Mexican or something.
Yeah.
You
like,
know,
never occurred to her.
Never occurred to her that, you know, who all those strange men were who used to come round all the time carrying guns and things, you know. And but anyway, the conclusion to this story was he got off on a Friday. When I say he got off, the jury found him not guilty.
Yeah.
He was not guilty,
of course.
Of course
he was not guilty, no.
And that was like on a Friday afternoon. On Saturday, the news out of the Daily of the Birmingham Evening Mail made me go down and knock on Ronnie Knight's door to ask him how he felt about you know, being cleared of the.
It's dangerous, isn't it? He obviously didn't like you very much.
It's very dangerous. Days. Fortunately, I never got further than the voice control box. Yeah. You know, when I rang it and I said, "Oh, Mr. Knight." And I said, "Oh, my parry, I'm the Birmingham Mail." "Yeah, what?" I said, "Look, I need to have a word with you." "Hey, you off?" "Hey." I mean, he didn't know where Birmingham was. Because his gangster empire didn't stretch.
Yeah. Well, alleged, lucky he didn't come out shooting the sword-off shotgun.
Alleged gangster empire didn't... yeah, so am I. Didn't stretch to Birmingham. But anyway, sadly, the marriage didn't last. And,
no.
And Ronnie then married another lady in Spain called Susan somebody.
Right.
And at their reception, because all of Fleet Street went out there, you know, because he was on the run there.
Well, they were all very glamorous figures.
Oh, yeah,
they all
were, yeah, but he was on the run on, you know, on the Costa del Crime.
Right.
And she gloried in walking round giving big V signs because she was pissed on champagne to any photographer.
It's like that movie Sexy Beast. Have you seen that?
No, no.
With, what's his name, Ray Winston.
Oh, yeah,
he's
Ray,
a villain, right? Yeah, but he's escaped to southern Spain.
Right, okay.
And he walks, the whole movie, he's walking around the pool covered in sort of baby oil.
Right, yeah.
Sunbathing. Yeah. Swearing down the phone. Fucking tell him from me, I'll fucking kill him. You know, that's the thing. It's great.
No, she just went around at this reception. There wasn't a picture of her without her giving a V sign, you know, and a snarl and a face, you know, fuck you, and all this. I don't know what she was doing because it wasn't the press who'd imprisoned her husband.
No,
it was
course.
Like the authorities. Right?
Wonderful people.
But then, the amazing thing was, Ronnie went completely fucking bust, right? And so the son saw an opportunity and they went over and offered him 10 grand to come back on a private plane with them and hand himself in. And he didn't have any money at all. He didn't even have money to keep, you know, the villa that he had in Spain. So he had no choice. So he took the 10 grand, didn't bother giving it to his wife, who'd left him by this time because he was broke, flew back and was pictured drinking champagne on the plane.
Right.
The judge gave him an extra sentence for flaunting his freedom by having his picture taken drinking champagne.
So he was very happy with the son.
Yeah, exactly. And as for the lady, the second Mrs. Knight, she ended up as a waitress in a bar they used to own.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
And
you know, it proves one thing and one thing only. Crime does not always pay.
No, indeed. It does sometimes, though. We're the two mics.
They used to dangle their dick and their bollocks into...
Genitalia.
The genitalia, that's right. Yeah, the genitalia.
Why
is
it that you extract such pleasure from talking about torture? Well, people have asked me this in the past.
No,
why is Porky love torture?
But
you love torture.
What he'd do is he would dangle their, you know, their genitalia.
Dangly bits.
Yeah, sorry if I used a...
Yeah, my apologies.
My apologies for the previous word I used. And he would dangle it in a bucket. And that would freeze.
Well, how would that work then? Were you kind of suspended over the bucket?
Yes, you were. Yeah. You were on a rack, and you were lowered down.
All right. Okay.
And then your genitalia was immersed in a bucket, which then froze.
Okay.
Right. Now that had the same effect, and you were left there for a day or two, outside in the cold, freezing cold, -20 or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And you noticed your genitalia turning black.
Black?
Yes.
I was thinking you'd say blue.
No. Oh, well, it's gone through blue to black because, of course...
It was like gangrene.
That's right, you're getting gangrene around the genitalia, okay?
Bloody hell.
And of course, you would, at some stage in the next 2 or 3 days, witness your genitalia falling off.
Right.
Because it would just snap off.
I suppose
off.
By that time, you're probably quite happy for it to fall off because it's probably quite painful.
Yes, but then, of course, you know, even if you recovered then, you're going to be a man without any genitalia. You must have seen all the pictures of the Cray twins when they had their nightclub in Leicester Square. And, you know, Lord Booby was there because he became a lover of one of the Crays, didn't he?
That's right.
Can't remember which one was. Who was the gay one? Was it...
I don't like to talk about it.
Is it Ronnie?
I think it was Ronnie.
It was Ronnie, And
it's not a very good idea to talk about that.
No, it's not a very good idea at all.
You might find somebody put some more nails in your tyres.
Yeah. I totally agree with that.
Fucking cat, you fucking tell him from me, I'll fucking kill him. You know, that's the thing.